Yeah, I'd be highly skeptical. I'll take the under on it not getting passed.
I am Reese Tisdale, and this is The Future of Water, which we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. This is episode 65, which is another milestone, if you're counting by five, and I think it's going to be a good one. I'm joined today by my colleagues, Amber Walsh and Ethan Edwards from Bluefield Research, to discuss recent EU policy and the directive that was signed in January that addressing corporate sustainability. This directive provides a reporting standard for large companies operating in the region to disclose metrics such as emissions, water usage, and associated risk management strategies that have an impact on their business operations. But before we do that, I wanted to make a quick announcement. Today, 785 million people globally do not have access to clean water. Another 2 billion do not have access to a toilet. That's one in four people. So from the podcast studio where I sit, the comfort of your car, your home, your office, these are astounding numbers. For these reasons, among others, Bluefield Research is collaborating with WaterAid, an international nonprofit working to make clean water access, sanitation, and good hygiene a reality for everyone. WaterAid has been working in the water sector on clean water projects and sanitation projects for more than 40 years across 34 countries. So in the ramp up to World Water Day, which is next month, 22nd of March, 2023, Bluefield Research and I am encouraging listeners to be part of the solution by learning more about challenges such as this at wateraid.org. And while you're there, I can't go any further without saying it, make a contribution, no matter how big or small, it all makes a difference. It's an easy thing to do from the comfort of where you are as a listener. So, with that being said, now on to our regularly scheduled programming with Amber Walsh and Ethan Edwards. All right, so I'm joined today by Amber Walsh and Ethan Edwards. Top of the morning, guys. It's a little early start because I know there's some meetings today. So, Amber, how are things?
Good, thank you.
Ethan, what about you?
Not bad. Just had a nice concert last night, so still recovering from that, but excited to be here bright and early.
Well, I'm not going to ask you what concert you went to. I'll ask you later in the day when we're offline. So, you know, I don't want you to be judged by your music choices. But all right. So with that being said, let's get into this. To kick things off, maybe Amber, let's start with you. You know, just recently, we released a research note. We've been digging into corporate sustainability, obviously, across a number of industry verticals, whether it be data centers, semiconductors, food and bev. I know you've done some stuff on municipal sustainability as well. But before we dive into the topic, which is really the recent EU directive, if we could step back maybe in layman's terms and talk about, like, what is corporate sustainability, what ESG, these terms get sort of bandied about, thrown around, whether it be in the news, even in our office. But can you tell us, like, when you look at it, given your research, how would you define it? What do you think about when you hear those terms?
Yeah, definitely. So there are various ways to look at it, like you mentioned. But looking broadly, I think of it as how companies are working to minimize their environmental impact. So we're kind of looking at that E and the ESG part of it. So, and then more specifically here at Bluefield, we're looking at it for their water footprint. So whether it's improving their water quality from discharges or reducing their intake. So this starts at just reporting water usage, which we'll get into in more detail in a little bit. But then what goals are they setting to reduce their intake? And then following up with that, what projects are they actually implementing? So what are they actually doing to meet these goals?
So, I mean, I think one of the things that, and this is, I think, what you're getting at is we look at water specifically, water, wastewater impacts. So in the case of the corporate landscape, you know, what is their impact, but also what are their risks, right? And that's manifested not only in reporting, but also operational or strategic decisions in many cases. But to date for corporate sustainability, I mean, the primary focus has been on, it's been broader than just water. So what's your take on the water side of the equation?
Yeah, definitely. So climate and greenhouse gas emissions really get the spotlight here when we're talking about environmental impact. But we are seeing an increased focus on water as we see shortages and also power troubles because of water shortages. So what we're kind of looking at is what's going to move the needle for water to be like greenhouse gas emissions. So whether that's brand perception, public pressure, investor pressures, financial implications, and like we'll talk about today, policy. My cynical view of corporate sustainability that has some truth to it is companies really care about the bottom line. So if there's a policy that's going to mandate something, they're going to have to comply. Also, if there's enough financial risk within it, then they're bound to take some action.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting part of it all. I mean, and one of the things we talked about at Bluefield for a while is, you know, even apart from policy mandates and directives, there is activity, right? And maybe we'll dive into that in a minute. But, you know, companies do have a bottom line. They're focused on that. And so if they do, if let's just say if they're in the Western US or if they're in the Po River Valley, they're exposed to drought, or sub-Saharan Africa, like South Africa, let's say, they're going to make decisions based on their needs, irrespective of the brand or the policy, you know, mandates. So I think that is really important. We're already seeing some of that. So let's dive into sort of the research note that you guys had worked on recently. So Amber, you took the lead on this, but you know, the reason for the discussion is a new EU directive. Can you just give the listeners an idea of what exactly we're talking about?
Yeah, definitely. So we took a deeper dive at the EU Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, as it does impact a broad chunk of companies, so approximately 50,000. This directive builds on another directive that's already in place called the Non-Financial Reporting Directive, and that applies to a little under 12,000 companies. So this increase in scope is really important and kind of drew our attention, as well as the new standards that are going to be in place. So these companies will be required to follow the European Sustainability Reporting Standards, and that's going to include quantifying consumption, withdrawals, and water risk. So that's kind of the overview. The details are, they get a little up in the air a little bit because it is still in planning. But as this plays out, we'll see more specific standards and guidance come into play.
I mean, I think if anything, while it is a mandate and the question is how much teeth does it really have, what it does signal is there's broader momentum and focus on corporate sustainability. Whether, like I said, in many cases, these companies, they don't even need to be forced to act, right? The market conditions are already driving them to do so. That would be insanity for a food and beverage company to set up shop in southern Arizona where there is no water or only an unreliable source of water and expect their operating risk to be zero. You know, and I think it's important, like semiconductors and such, you know, they're building in places where there are, you know, whether it be Taiwan, it's already there in place, whether it be Arizona, whether it be Texas. So it's interesting to see how that happens. Well, Ethan, let's bring you into this. I don't want to leave you hanging. You know, a couple of months ago, you were looking at drought conditions in Europe. You've looked at hydrogen markets, power markets. Let's talk a little bit about the EU, why they might be further out on the curve than other regions in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I think the EU as a whole has generally been more climate focused than a lot of other regions and continents, and wide sweeping policies like this are definitely more of the norm. And when it comes to drought, I mean, we saw pretty serious drought in various parts of Europe last summer. We took a look at some of the data from the European Union, and out of 16 countries, four reported water reservoir levels dropping below 75% of a 5-year or so moving average. And there are areas where it was a lot more acute. So for example, Portugal saw water storage capacities fall below 50% for 31 weeks. So that's over half a year. And if you look at how their water levels just trend over time, it's very variable. It can drop really fast. And then when it rains, it can really fill almost right back up. So with a lot of these drought-related headlines sort of in the minds of, I'm sure, all the countries, there's a bigger push towards water accountability.
I think one of the things that's interesting also last summer, you know, we hear about even low levels of rivers where they can't even transport certain, you know, commodities or products. I mean, even in the case of power, like coal, right, you know, to certain markets. So they're not even getting enough power. There's insufficient coal supply for power generation, which, as we all know, is obviously even a bigger issue in today's climate, given what's happening in Russia and Ukraine, rising natural gas prices, et cetera. So it's not like climate just affects drinking water or the agricultural community. There's more widespread impacts on what is happening. And I think to your point, when it comes to Europe, I mean, they've been, once again, a place like Germany, it's been much further out on the curve when it comes to renewable energy adoption. Northern Europe, you're seeing things like, you know, offshore wind. I mean, we're just building the first offshore wind farm in the US, but also solar tariffs in Spain in the first decade of this century. But Germany, Italy, France, they really built, I mean, if anything, they sort of built the foundation for renewables. And in the case of solar PV, China took the manufacturing end of that and really commoditized it. So they're out there, and you know, they've also signed off on the UN climate action plan. So with that being said, you know, while Europe is doing this, and this may be a question to both you guys, can we expect the same in the US? Are we expecting a broader directive that's going to do something similar? What do you guys think?
In early 2022, the SEC did put in a proposal for a climate initiative. So that would be similar to the EU directive that we talked about. However, it has faced great industry pushbacks. Timeline is undefined. So it is a bit of a different landscape here. The US clearly faces water stress out in the West. They have a host of water quality issues. So water problems are still here, but the likelihood that something as broad as the EU reporting directive gets passed in the US is a little more unlikely in my take, but it is in the works.
What do you think, Ethan?
Yeah, I'd be highly, highly skeptical. I'll take the under on it not getting passed, but there will likely be a little bit more movement on the state level. And I mean, we are seeing a lot of companies already just take the lead and do it themselves, looking at, you know, movement in Europe and just a general movement towards ESG in general. It's something that's on their mind a little more, and it does affect the bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned the momentum. At the same time, one thing it's worth, maybe why don't we just jump to you, Amber? I'll just follow up. You know, let's just say in the EU, we use that, and then maybe I'll add a point to what types of companies are first to act or are already acting, but will it make a difference, right? I mean, aren't companies already addressing this, like I said?
Yeah, so I think the thing that comes with this EU directive and why it's so important is it kind of forces their hand. So it forces them to be transparent. And so yes, some companies are already exploring reporting water usage. They're putting goals out there to either reduce water intake or be water positive, water neutral. There's a whole host of terms that they use. But I do think that the pressure that this puts on companies to be transparent is key here. So to add kind of some color on what companies are already doing, we track 105 companies, industrial companies at Bluefield. And right now, 92 disclose their water usage data. So that's an increase from when we did the exercise in 2020, an increase of about a little over 5%. So significant trending upward in increasing their reporting. And then we've also seen an uptick in water management projects, specifically in improving water optimization and increasing reuse efforts. So I think as the directive plays out and companies are mandated to report, then we'll see that trend continue in more goals set and more projects implemented.
Yeah, I think the project insights that we have is really interesting. I mean, you've gone through over several years, you know, at least tracking over several years, not looking back specifically, but the point that they are deploying reuse. There are obviously water conservation measures. In some cases, they're partnering with NGOs or third parties in certain parts of the world, like WaterAid, I think is one, if I recall. So there's action happening. So, I mean, this is important. Maybe you have some idea, you know, should vendors care?
Yeah, definitely. I think as there is this greater focus on companies and what they're doing with their water, that it does open opportunity for those third-party water management providers. Like we see partnerships with Suez, Veolia, Ecolab. These big companies are partnering with them, so then they can kind of be like, okay, how can we improve our water usage? What improved efficiencies can we use? How can we increase reuse? So there is a big play here, and we already see these partnerships playing out a little bit.
And I suspect it has a little bit to do with industry, the types of company, or let's just say light industry versus heavy industry. I mean, there's a difference in how those companies are maybe portrayed when it comes to ESG. What do you guys think?
I can speak to the light industries, kind of take that take. They are more aware of their brand image, I feel, because they're right in the face of the consumer. So we have seen initiatives taken by like food and bev companies, data centers, that's a big one. So definitely in the light industries, the customer facing industries, I would say that they're more keen on this ESG stuff.
What do you think, Ethan?
Yeah, well, it's interesting to me, and it will be interesting to see how it plays out sector by sector, because I do also feel that heavy industries sometimes fly a little more under the radar. For example, energy or mining or power. And, you know, a common thing to do in ESG, in the ESG space, is to just rank yourself against your competitors. So if your space is lagging behind, you know, maybe your competition's a little less. But it's interesting to me, especially for power, because we recently forecasted the global power markets, and Europe is one of the areas where water usage likely will increase, partly due to their expected increases in nuclear power plants. And so it'll be interesting to see how energy companies and power companies, which will be included in this directive, manage those risks and that reporting going forward. I think for me, one of the interesting things will be how much more data do we see at a granular level? Because if you look at what the directive does require, it's sort of very high level aggregated data, sort of like percent and amount of volume from water risk areas, but it's not very specific and it doesn't tell you, you know, exactly where as an investor you should be worried about. And to me, I almost think it's almost like if there are colleges submitting data to be ranked, they're going to sort of strive to meet these very few metrics that the EU has put forward. For example, with the big energy companies, they're reporting on how much water consumption in terms of liters per kilowatt hour of intensity they have. And it'll be fascinating to see how they use other metrics, such as driving up renewable energy production, to push some of those values down going forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think cynically, there's a little bit of gamesmanship going on. I mean, I think, Amber, you and I have talked about this for some time, and I know with others at Bluefield, about, you know, like how real are these corporate sustainability initiatives? You know, what are they comparing to? I think one of the interesting things that you've highlighted, it's not always quite easy to do, but, you know, even like, what are they benchmarking against? Are they benchmarking against, you know, what they were doing in 2000, 2010, or 2015? Are they basing it on sort of output? Are they, you know, there are a number of different ways to skin the cat, as I would say, which does sow some skepticism into the market. And I think that's also what's happening partly in the US when there's talking about the mandates. There's real question about, one, what is its impact? Are we just sort of throwing time, resources, money at something that's already taking place? Like we've talked, I mean, Amber, I think you nailed it, that, you know, of the 105 companies that we track on an ongoing basis, most of them are reporting water specifically. So if they're reporting water, they're certainly reporting climate, carbon, and other things. So in many ways, these leading companies in the world in their respective sectors are further out there. I think, Ethan, you raise a really good point. You know, you do have to compare yourself against your peers, like a mining company. Rio Tinto should not be comparing itself to Danone or, you know, another food and beverage, or H&M, a fashion company. That seems kind of crazy, right? It just doesn't make any sense. But it is interesting comparing industry to industry as a whole. There's definitely a difference between the quote unquote branded companies, those that are out there in front of the customer, that they do have risk. I mean, all it takes is one viral tweet and you're, next thing you know, you're in a public relations nightmare when it comes to water usage. I think you can talk to plenty of the beverage companies that have been in that space. I think the other thing, but I think more positively though, before we got on this, our colleague Keith Hayes is at a UN conference on, I think, public-private partnership finance and looking at mainly the municipal sector. But one of his comments when he and I were going back and forth this morning is kind of, the discussion was, what's the problem here? The problem isn't the technology. I mean, obviously, you know, there's plenty of, you know, membrane solutions or digital solutions or engineered solutions, customized or commoditized. The bigger issue is just paying for this and financing it, right? So in the municipal sector, particularly when you get outside of the US and Europe, it's really difficult to finance projects. There's higher risks there. Who's paying, you know, whether it be regional bank that's going to finance it, is it going to come from private funding, but are the policies in place to drive it? But when you look at the industrial or the corporate sector, actually, the policy is in place and it is the bottom line. That's why I personally, I think I even said this to Ethan yesterday in the office, that I have mixed feelings about sort of this top-down mandated, like, you got to do this, you got to do that. Don't get me wrong, I'm all in favor of government, their benefits to it and what it does. At the same time, sometimes it just create more bureaucracy than is necessary in the case of the corporates. Transparency is a good thing. You know, when we invest in a company, we would like to know its risks. At least the financial community would. I don't know. I sort of go back and forth on it, but it is really interesting. And the EU is one place where they can make these wide sweeping directives across a region. So it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds. But I do appreciate you guys sharing some light on this. Is there anything else we missed? Anything else you guys want to add before we jet?
I think one thing just to add is how this is going to help, hopefully, standardize reporting. We've kind of touched on this a bit. Like, companies in their sustainability report can frame their metrics kind of to fit how they want to be perceived and should themselves in a good light. So I think having a set standard of reporting is kind of just going to put everyone on an even playing field. So you can kind of look across companies, compare industries, all that. So I do think, although it might be a headache for the companies to get all this data and report, that it is going to be a beneficial tool to just have it be standardized across.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's a really good point. Just even understanding it, you know, as you were saying that, Amber, one thing that came to mind was we did a corporate sustainability report on automotive, if I recall. I think he worked on that, or at least we looked at the automotive sector, and we were comparing, you know, the different, you know, whether it be Toyota versus Tesla. Tesla was one, and obviously a relative newcomer to the market. That's no secret. Their water usage was pretty high. They're showing real declines. But also when it comes to standardization, I know that the pushback, it seems, from people like Elon Musk is that they've done more for the climate than anybody else. I mean, you know, so they are electrifying, you know, the global auto fleet. And so that in one way is a path to improvement. But they're also, you know, they're also exposed on the mining side, their supply chains, right? If they are, you know, whether it be lithium mining or for cobalt, you know, it's coming from a lot of different places. I know they've got a gigafactory in Nevada, you know, and I think they're actually off-taking in that case. They may be even off-taking some wastewater, reclaimed wastewater from a municipal utility for its operations, even if it's just for cooling. It's a step in the right direction. They've also received some pressure. I know our colleague Colin O'Brien wrote a research note on Tesla in Germany that they were overdrawing or there was risk to an aquifer. So companies are exposed. It's really interesting. But the standardization, I agree 100%. That would go a long way just in understanding what they're doing. Ethan, anything else to add?
Yeah, I mean, overall, just kind of like we've touched on before, it really is just part of a larger trend. Seeing Tesla's water usage come down. I mean, companies are responding to risks. Just one example, we saw last year, Enel, a private company that controls a lot of Italy's hydroelectric plants, they were forced to reduce production just from the river basin due to that drought. And pretty much shortly after that, you saw it show up in their ESG reports that they are looking to improve cooling water management along the Po River and those areas. So they're getting ready for it. And it's definitely a shift.
Even in an unbandated world.
Yep.
So that being said, before I let you guys go, what are you guys working on? Ethan, what's up with you? What are you about to put out?
Hopefully the power forecast that we briefly mentioned here will come out soon, and be on the lookout for a hydrogen report.
Amber, what about you?
Wrapping up the quarterly for industrial and then the semiconductor forecast.
Nice. All right. Well, I look forward to it. I know the power report is on my desk, going through that, and lots of other good stuff coming out from Bluefield. So thanks again for you guys taking the time, particularly early in the morning. And I know you guys got a hard stop for a meeting coming up pretty soon. So thanks again.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. So before we sign off, if you're in Boston, let us know. We can set up a meeting at our location, 10 minutes from the airport, 10 minutes from the train, middle of downtown. Please subscribe to the Future Water Podcast and give us a review. It helps us help you. Send us a note to waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com with any topic ideas you would like us to discuss. We're doing this for you. And so we want to talk about things that are interesting to you. Lastly, tell a friend about it. This podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit us at bluefieldresearch.com. Be well, take care, talk soon.